It's time for the Plastic Scale Modeling Hour, talk radio for scale modelers. Sponsored by Grex Airbrush, the evolution in perfection. This is episode 50. That's 50, published January 10th, 2013. This week, we've got a little of this and a little of that, plus some great kit giveaways courtesy of Revell. Settle into your workbench. We'll be right back after these messages. If you're like me, you want an airbrush that is reliable, easy to clean, and more importantly, comfortable in your hand. One that is intuitive to use, which gives you greater control as you apply paint to your model. Whether you have excellent dexterity or have stiffness and limited mobility, then the Grex Tritium series is something you need to experience for yourself. Join the thousands of satisfied customers who find the pistol grip and trigger action design the answer whether doing fine, delicate work or spraying broad strokes to cover large areas. Grex offers a full line of airbrushes, spray guns, compressors, paints, and accessories. Grex Airbrush is the evolution in perfection. Find out for yourself by visiting them online at grexairbrush.com or by calling 626-289-7618 today. Just a reminder, Bryant from Grex will be in Oshkosh, Wisconsin on January 15th, demonstrating and providing an opportunity for some hands-on experience with the Grex line of airbrushes. This presentation is being held at Hobbytown, USA in Oshkosh and is part of the IPMS Steve Whitman's monthly meeting. Things get started at 7 p.m. and is open to everyone. Hobbytown is located at 807 Oregon Street. For more information, email me here at mailbag@theplasticscalemodelinghour.com. Let's listen how things got started 50 episodes ago.
And welcome to this Plastic Scale Modeling Hour with your guest, Hawkeye. Welcome, everybody. And this is our test shot episode. And we're looking forward to bringing this show to you every week. And we're going to have some great guests and we're going to have some great topics. And the whole purpose of this show is to kind of cultivate that next generation of scale modelers and aviation enthusiasts. And to talk a little bit about that, I have my special guest, Zach Boffman from EAA Air Venture Museum. Welcome, Zach.
Zach, I can tell you that on the first episode, my throat was dry, and if you listen, you can hear me say guest, not host of the show.
Well, you know, that'll happen. It takes practice.
Yeah, we've come a long way since that very first test shot episode.
Yeah, that's been a while back. That was in, November 2011? So congratulations, Jerry, on the 50th episode of the Plastic Scale Modeling Hour.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for being the first guest then and being a guest again this time. What's going on in your world there?
We have a couple of, one primary event coming up at the EAA Air Venture Museum that pertains to the hobby. It's called Family Flight Fest, which is an annual event that we always have, and it's coming up this year, March 2nd and 3rd. And for anybody that's been here, you know it's a great event, and if you haven't ever been here before, it's a really fun event for the entire family, and we have various activities available throughout both days, including aviation films for all ages playing in our Skyscape movie theater. We have flight simulators scattered all throughout the museum, including our kind of a one-of-a-kind Wright Flyer simulator that's built like the wing of the Wright Flyer, and you actually lay down in the cradle and move your hips around to fly the airplane. And then we have indoor RC flying demonstrations in the Founders Wing. And one of the funnest events, in my opinion, are the free flight rubber band powered models that will be demoed in the Eagle Hangar. And then, of course, we have hundreds of free balsa wood gliders that we give away for kids and adults to play with and launch in the Eagle Hangar as well. But pertaining to plastic scale modeling, we've always had a large display of plastic models and modelers on hand to answer questions about the hobby. And if anybody in the Fox Valley area or elsewhere in Wisconsin or the surrounding states would like to participate and bring your work and, you know, talk to kids and adults about the hobby and what's involved and how to get involved and why you do it, we'd love to have you come. It's not a contest, so there's no prizes involved. It's just a display only, but it's a great chance to share your hobby with other people of all ages. This is one of our biggest museum events. We get a great turnout every year, so it's a great opportunity to share in the hobby.
You know, and if you look back, I've posted every time that I've been involved with Family Flight Fest, I usually talk about it on the Squawk Box. So if you just go to the Squawk Box page and just do a search on Family Flight Fest, you know, up will appear some articles that talking about previous and images of the event. And it's a good time just to sit there and bring some supplies along and do some building. I did an interview with Al Jones at one of the Family Flight Fests, which is on a previous episode of the show. And we just sat there and talked. But the other thing that really I find rewarding about being there is seeing little kids come up. Now, you know, we try to make sure they don't touch our models, but to see the kid's face just light up when they see all the airplane models. And of course, they look at them as something different than we do. But the other thing, the other rewarding thing is to see a veteran walk up and ask, do you have this airplane? Or if he spots it on the table and he says, yeah, I worked on that. I flew that. You know, it's to hear their, to share their stories with you. It's a great opportunity to interact with those people who actually flew the aircraft, or for the guys that bring, you know, vehicles along too, you know, armor and stuff like that to display. Those stories are also shared.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's not just airplane models that people bring. People bring all kinds of different models, figures, you name it. And like you say, hearing the stories involved from the visitors is a lot of fun. I always get a thrill of being there and Al or you or one of the other people that participate is sitting there with a box open, sprues out all on the table and gluing parts together. And people that have never been involved with the hobby come by and they look at that and they see all the little parts, you know, and they're amazed that somebody can take all that and then make a beautiful model out of it. And it's always interesting to see the reactions from people when they see that. And especially
yeah,
when you have folks like you and you know, Al, good grief. Al's models are always, and they're just fantastic. So people always get a kick, you know, is it die cast? They can't believe that somebody built that.
Yeah, they don't understand that this box of parts can turn into something that we, you know, that's why we build. We like what we see at the end. They don't realize how much work actually goes into them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's always nice when you have somebody like Al available to explain how easy it is to get into the hobby. I mean, people think that it's, okay, well, you've got all these parts, and it takes a lot of patience and a lot of time. And then he'll pull out a Snap-Tight kit, which can literally take 10 minutes if you're quick about it, you know, and no paint. So it's always nice to explain how easy it is to get into this hobby and how relaxing it can be and how frustrating it can be. But, you know, it's always nice to get others involved.
And there's always a few other guys that will travel up from, like you say, around the state to bring their models to display. It's a chance for them to share, you know, their collection with people who are there to observe the one-to-one scale collection that the museum offers and see a lot of things. That's one of the things models can actually help, because the collection isn't inclusive of everything that ever flew. But by having models on the table, you can show somebody that, you know, oh yeah, this is the airplane that my dad flew during the war. I've really never seen one up close, and I only had a vague, you know, I've seen pictures of it. Is there one in the museum? Well, no, but if you look over here on the table, here's several examples of it.
Right. And as some of your listeners might remember, I run the oral history program for EAA, Timeless Voices Aviation. And I'm always, well, I'm not amazed about it anymore. I kind of expect it, but it's always interesting to hear how many of the people involved in real aviation, whether it be military or civilian, got their start through modeling, you know, plastic modeling, RC modeling. It's just, you know, I would guesstimate that 80% of the people involved with full-scale model or full-scale airplanes and aircraft got their start building models in one way or another. So I mean, it really is the doorway into aviation.
And it'll also be the exit for a lot of people, because once you get to that age, or you just aren't into flying anymore, working around airplanes, but you still want to participate, you go back to it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, let's just remind everybody, the Family Flight Fest is on March 2nd and 3rd. It's a Saturday and Sunday event. You can pick one day or both days to come. If you want to come exhibit your models, you can leave your models there overnight. They are secured, which is what a lot of us will do. We'll come in early Saturday morning, set up, display our models all day Saturday, hang out. There's a lot of things to occupy your time. There's a lot of things to look through, a lot of photography opportunities for reference photos, and then come back on Sunday and stay the day. And it, you know, there's been times when the weather's been ideal on one day and crappy on the other, and crappy on the first day and ideal on the second. So you never know what we're gonna have in March in Northeast Wisconsin.
yeah. There's been snow on the ground. There's been blue skies, and we've had a little bit of everything.
And we've had modelers come all the way up from Chicago to display their models. I know one listener out there who came up from the Lakes region, and him and his wife spent a better part of a day out looking at the eagles, which we have plenty of bald eagles up here in Northeast Wisconsin right now, and that was one of their come to the thing, exhibit, and then, hey, watch my table. We're going to go look at eagles. Got you covered.
Yep. And like Jerry mentioned, the tables are secure. If another modeler is not there watching, then an EA staff member, usually me, is there watching. Because of my interest with the plastic models, I like to hang out in that area. But there are all kinds of activities. And, you know, if you come up and you have kids, bring your kids, because you can turn them loose, and there's just so many things to do over that weekend. Crafts, paper airplanes. We have this really neat paper airplane launcher that can launch an airplane quite a good distance. Like I said, the simulators. We're having cockpit climb opportunities. I'm not entirely sure at this point which airplanes will be opened up. But for the older adults, the modelers, you know, if you want to come and get those interior shots of the Mosquito or the P-51D or the B-25 or whatever, well, you know, I'm an EA staff member and a museum staff member, and I have access to those airplanes. So if you're looking for those detail shots, this is your opportunity to come to the museum and share your hobby and bring your camera and get a chance to look inside some of that stuff.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'll be there. What else we got coming this way? I know we had Scale Fest.
Scale Venture. Scale Venture was in 2011, and actually that was what we talked about that very first episode. If I remember right, that episode was recorded just a couple weeks after we had the first EAA Scale Venture, which was a show with prizes. We're hoping to do that again this year. We had some constraints on events last year, and we're hoping to get back into doing many more events like Family Flight Fest, like Scale Venture, but we're hoping that we can bring that back and do that again in the fall. And although it doesn't pertain to plastic modeling, EAA has been working very closely with the Academy of Model Aeronautics to develop some RC events on the EAA grounds. So we're actually hoping to expand the visitor experience in that regard. And if we can do anything in the way of plastic modeling as well, that'd be great. But hopefully we'll be able to do something along those lines later this year, or you know, perhaps in the fall.
Well, that's good. You know, and I know we had the Little Wings Big Dream exhibit there for 2 years running. That came to an end, and now there's something else filling that space. But sometime down the road, you know, models always seem to make their appearance again, and who knows, maybe we'll have the opportunity to do another model exhibit there at the museum.
Oh, yeah, and we always have models on display throughout the museum. It's just the Little Wings Big Dreams was the first time we had a dedicated exhibit that was all about modeling. And it was thrilling to see that the success of that exhibit. It got a very positive response from EA members and non-members, you know, visitors to the museum alike. It was just it was kind of the springboard into EAA's relationship with the AMA. So plastic modeling and RC modeling, it's like I said, it really is the doorway into 1-1 scale aviation. And any way that we can get people involved in sharing the spirit of aviation is, you know, whatever the scale might be, is important. So,
yeah, scale modeling is a great opportunity to introduce the next generation, the next customer into the hobby, into aviation.
And it's, you know, I know that we modelers always like to complain about the price of plastic modeling going up, but when you look at how you get people involved and keep them engaged in aviation, this is the way to do it. I mean, it's relatively inexpensive. And for the value you get out of building your own model and displaying it, I mean, it's going to stay with you much longer than a $60 video game will. So it's just a great opportunity for people, kids, really kids of all ages, to get involved with aviation.
Well, just look at this recent college football game between Notre Dame and Alabama. You think of the ticket prices that the tickets were going for, and you paid that horrendous price just to get a seat in the nosebleed section, only to see your team lose.
Right.
I could have bought a lot of models for that.
Oh yeah.
I could have probably bought a house or a car, a nice car, for what they paid for some of those tickets.
Well, when you look at the how well engineered and how detailed some of these kits are, and how much time goes into it. I look at plastic modeling when I buy a kit as an investment in entertainment. I mean, it's entertainment value for me. It's relaxing, as I said before. It can be very frustrating, but for the most part, it's relaxing, and you get to build something that you know, you might not never have a real P-47, but you can sure have a scale model one on your desk, and it gives you a chance to connect with an airplane. And if you're a builder like me, you tend to get caught up in the history of whatever aircraft it is you're trying to depict. So it's not just the chance to expand on your modeling skills, but you learn a little bit. Actually, you learn a lot in regards to history and who the men and women were that flew these airplanes or helicopters or spacecraft, whatever it is you're building. So modeling is really a great opportunity to get involved in aviation on so many different levels, so many different scales. It's just, and Family Flight Fest is just an opportunity to showcase that, getting the plug in there again. So
you're a happy camper when you have a model or a diecast or actually get to see a P-47.
Oh yeah.
If we took P-47s away from you, you would probably just, I don't know, we'd never see you again.
Oh, geez, I guess I'd have to just stick with autogyros. my second love.
Your second love is autogyros.
Yep.
Okay, well, that explains a few things about you then.
Yeah, I'm a rotonut.
Well, Zach, I appreciate you spending the time this morning to do this interview. I know you got a busy schedule ahead, and we'll let you go.
Well, again, thanks for giving me the opportunity to share in the spirit of aviation, albeit on a smaller scale. And congratulations on the show. It's been a great success, and I'm looking forward to the next 50.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Zach.
Sure thing.
More of the program right after these messages.
That's the theme that introduces the Big Band Jump program. If big band music makes your scale modeling time more enjoyable, join me, Don Kennedy, for Big Band Jump. After listening to this week's episode of the Plastic Scale Modeling Hour Talk Radio for Scale Modelers, click on the BBJ icon to join me for the latest edition of Big Band Jump. We welcome your attendance.
VideoWorkbench.com is the place to learn to build and paint model kits like an expert. Hosted by award-winning hobbyist and owner of Video Workbench, Jason Garris, his videos show how to achieve top-quality, contest-winning results and demonstrates how anyone can make great-looking scale model kits no matter the age or skill level. Join VideoWorkbench.com and Jason Garris on Facebook, YouTube, Blip.tv, and iTunes to learn the latest tips, tools, and techniques.
For over 65 years, Revell Incorporated and its associate companies have offered a wide variety of model kits for every taste and age group in the hobby market. A consistent level of detail and accuracy assures every modeler that the kit they buy will be the most accurate representation possible of their favorite subject and confirms that Revell kits are the best value for the money. Revell remains committed to the foundation of the brand, interaction with products, authenticity of experience, and above all, fun. We're proud to have Revell as a supporter of the Plastic Scale Modeling Hour. Visit Revell.com to learn more about the company and its vast product offerings. Check out Revell USA on Facebook and be sure to like and tell them that you're a fan of the show. On the show's Facebook page, we asked a trivia question. When was Chippy's first appearance here on the Plastic Scale Modeling Hour? It sounded something like this.
So that makes good sense.
It was during episode 3, as I was interviewing Job Conger from AeroNo Museum, when Chippy wandered into the studio and, as she usually does, expresses her comments freely. Congratulations to Dave Vitra, who will be receiving a kit courtesy of Revell. The Plastic Scale Modeling Hour has been generously supported by Excel Hobby Blades, manufacturer of the world's finest blades. When you need a keen and accurate cut, trust only Excel Hobby Blades. Visit your local hobby, craft, or hardware retailer for a complete selection of blades, handles, and tools today. Excel Hobby Blades, Patterson, New Jersey. That's right, Chippy. Zuron tools are the perfect choice for our hobby and craft projects. They are made here in the USA. They are quality tools that offer the highest precision as well as comfort and durability. Let's not forget about their excellent warranty. Yes, Chippy, you have your own special needs, which Zuron Tool provides the best and most affordable solution for. And we know you demand only the very best. Zuron tools are available from most hobby and craft stores. Visit Zuron.com today. Zuron is spelled X-U-R-O-N. We want to thank Zuron Tools for being a supporter of the Plastic Skill Modeling Hour.
Tonight, I want to introduce a guest that I met back in 2007 while attending the Twin Cities Aero Historians Scale Modeling event, Nordicon. Please welcome my friend and fellow scale miler, Frank Cooten.
Well, Frank, it's kind of an interesting tidbit, but of all the episodes that have aired out of the last 50, the ones that include you seem to be the highest in repeat downloads.
Well, I'll tell you, if I'm paranoid, I'd say they all have it in for me. But I've enjoyed that. I mean, I enjoyed the first time. I was thinking it was January 6, 2012 when we did this about 6:30 in the evening. And here you are, 50 shows later, you'd be congratulated for the longevity of the program. And golly, I think it's needed. It's a lot of great information and specifically dedicated to plastic modeling. I know you've had the RC on there and you've had the Grex people on there, and it's wonderful. I mean, talk about a nirvana for modelers. You've got it going, Jerry.
Well, you know, and I'm very appreciative of having sponsors like Grex to come up and, you know, help support us financially.
Sure.
And the support that we get from the other companies, such as Revell, Zeron, Excel, they've been providing products that we've been giving away. And we are giving Revell kits away as part of this 50th episode. And a lot more people are a little more open-minded now that it's also a recorded interview versus a live interview.
Mm-hmm.
That we're seeing more guys that are saying, you know, I think I can probably come on and do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have some, you know, some other modelers coming on and talking.
Sure.
But the success and the we want to get back to a live format. You know, mm-hmm. want to get it back to live, mm-hmm. and someday even expand that to doing a video broadcast.
That would be great.
But that all takes sponsorship.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
This for me right now is a labor of love.
Mm-hmm.
And as they say, love is great, but it doesn't pay the bills.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Dreams don't feed you. Exactly.
That's true.
Exactly.
That's true. But, so you can put them into, you know, returning a return on that investment.
Right.
But.
Right. Well, you know, my philosophy is we all have to help each other, and you're certainly doing that, Jerry, just by providing the venue and the platform for all of us just to have more or less an armchair conversation about what interests us in the field. And I'm sure the other modelers you've interviewed are the same way. It's just fun to listen to and to talk and to share things, and who knows where it's going to go, you know. But these have been fun. I've enjoyed this very much.
You know, a lot of people return to the hobby after hearing conversations about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're talking about it, it's alive.
Exactly.
It's when we stop talking that things just kind of fade away.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't agree more.
And with more and more baby boomers retiring, and a lot of those were modelers as kids, I think that this hobby can once again surge to being very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And Lord knows the kit manufacturers are doing their part by giving us plenty to be interested in.
Yep. I agree there. It's like I said, we've never had it so good. And I know in my own retirement, you know, I've been retired for a few years now, and what a godsend this hobby has been to me. I started when I was very, very young and just kept on going, and here we are today. And, boy, talk about something that you enjoy looking forward to every day and then actually having the opportunity and the abilities to go and sit at a bench and work for a period of time and create something from nothing, more or less. Great fun, and a great pastime.
Yeah, and I'm really enjoying the time that I get to spend with my grandkids to kind of just, you know, plant that seed.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't happen as often as I'd like, but when it does happen, I think it's more enjoyable for everybody.
I agree 100%. So, yes, again, congratulations on 50 programs, and going strong, and let's shoot for 50 more. Yeah, no, I think that I was thinking about this before you called, and I recently built the Hasegawa F-102 in 72nd scale because it had been sitting on my shelf for years. And, of course, about 3 days before I finished it, here comes Ming out with their new 72nd scale kit. So I guess I was a sacrificial lamb in 2012 in that regard, because now I made that happen, and I'm taking full credit for that. I don't know what possessed me to build an F-102 at that point in time, but like I said, 3 days before I finished it, here comes the announcement on the Internet that Ming came out with a 72nd scale F-102. So, oh, well, somebody's got to do it, I guess, Jerry.
I've seen the kit out there. Is it an all-new tooling, or is it just a repurposed Hasegawa?
From what I understand, it's all-new tooling. Your dive brake is open, or can be positioned open in the back, and I understand that the missile bay is open, and it has a detailed cockpit, and it's got that, the Case 10 wing, whereas the Hasegawa kit was the Case 20 wing, or maybe I have that mixed up, but it is all new too, from what I understand. I haven't seen the kit yet, but from what I've heard, it's a very, very nice little kit.
Well, I wonder if they're going to follow on and release that in, say, 132nd scale.
I don't know. I tell you, before they do that, I'd like to see them release an F-106. to complement it, because I've got that old Hasegawa kit sitting on my shelf too. And I thought, well, you know, let's not build this right away and let's see what Meng does. So who knows, you know?
Yeah.
But that and the what I've really been impressed with, although I've not built one, but I've seen on the net the results are these wings kits and the World War One stuff. My God, they're beautiful kits. So model people these days have it made if you're into World War One, from what I see.
You know, you mentioned that, and one of the guys in our club, he says, you know, I'm going to hold out. I'm waiting for, you know, this. I've heard rumors that they're going to release this kit, and they put out their new releases, I think it was like the first part of December, and I think he said it lasted all of 3 days.
Mm.
He ended up ordering, you know, he loves those kits. It's just, you know, and the ones that I've seen, as you said, they build beautifully. I mean, you really got to have sticky fingers to screw that kit up.
You would think, you know, they're a good size for one thing, and that makes building them easier rather than the smaller stuff. But gee, the detail they've incorporated, that comes right out of the box, not necessarily something you have to modify or add to the kit. And I've seen some gorgeous examples on the internet of these built-ups and the variety. All of a sudden, I mean, they've just gushed the market with these things. And it's a long time in coming, but why not? I mean, the rest of us have been spoiled with a lot of new releases and aftermarket and you name it. And now all of a sudden the World War One builders have an opportunity like they've never had before. They're taking good advantage of it. So I'm very happy for that they have come forth in this day and age. It's an area that needs covering. I might add, too, I keep hoping and looking for a company like, say, MPM or Special Hobby to release the early FJ Furies, the -2, -3, -3M. That's another area that hasn't been covered. And, boy, it would be nice to see those either in 48th or 72nd scale. So with the proliferation of all the new releases, I keep hoping anyway.
It seems like there's a big emphasis right now in a lot of the kits that we're seeing. Early Cold War seems to be picking up, you know, interest in from the kit manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few esoteric stuff coming out as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, there's, you know, probably going to be more 109s, 190s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they.
But the nice thing is we're seeing, and I know ME-410, you know, we're starting to see some of these other aircraft that played a vital role in Luftwaffe and in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
The JU-88 wasn't that long ago when it came out, Revell released. But I'm as you said, the F-102, F-106, we've had a 1/32nd scale F-100 that Trumpeter released.
Mm-hmm.
They did a 105, but again, I know for those of us here in the North Country, and I know you're in up there in Minnesota, we were exposed to, you know, NORAD, and the bases, the Dew Line, and in supporting that Dew Line was a numerous bases of fighters placed across the northern United States and also into Canada. And we saw F-102s, F-106s, F-101 Voodoos, you know, aircraft whose specific purpose was to get up fast, cover as much territory as quickly as they could, and then launch air-to-air missiles to defeat the approaching Soviet bombers.
Yes, very definitely. And I just saw the other day that Revell is re-releasing their 72nd scale F-101B. And that'll be a welcome addition, because that came out, and like their F-89, it came out and was out for a short time and then went away. And I was fortunate enough to having built their F-89 and just a gorgeous kit. And I've also always heard that the F-101B from Revell is an excellent kit. So we'll have that coming back before too long. So there's several holes getting plugged now. But like you say, there's still a ways to go with quality kits. They might have been out before, but not with the quality we see today.
And with that, we're hoping that the aftermarket guys step up and give us the resin and photo etch.
I'm sure they will.
To really kick those kits up to the level that we come to expect from a new release.
Yep, I think they probably will. With so many aftermarket kits out there these days, or manufacturers, I should say, and specifically catering to a specific kit or adding things that really enhance the kit. I said it, I think, during our first interview last year, we've never had it so good as modelers, and then the beat just keeps on. I've noticed it all year long with the releases. Who would think, you know, that we would see such a broad spectrum of aftermarket items and decals as well? I mean, that came first, but boy, the aftermarket has really taken off. And I think they've refined their processes so that we're getting good products. And I know one of the major bugaboos I read about and I run into myself sometime is, you know, who designed this because it doesn't fit? Well, yeah, there's still some trimming that needs doing and some fitting and everything. But gee, once you do that, it looks like $1 million in there if you give it a good paint job. So we're on the fast track with regards to all that, and I'm excited about 2013, just to see what else comes to the fore.
You know, and the demand for aftermarket seems to be increasing as well. And I know, you know, there's a lot of aftermarket manufacturers that are small, one-man operations, and as you said, they've refined their processes. They've improved their quality, but their biggest problem right now is to meet the demand of their customers.
Yes.
And you know, and that can be a double-edged sword. You're in great demand, but if you can't deliver,
yep.
You know, it's that step in business where you have to either I grow or I go.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, it's a tough way all around.
Well, and how do you know how well your products are going to be received at the onset when you first lay them out there? And then all of a sudden you've had this tremendous demand, and as you said, you can't keep up, then you've got some frustrated people. But I think, you know, modelers overall, they recognize when one of these comes out, you know, they're probably going to take a chance on it and give it a shot and incorporate it into their build. So in that regard, it's wonderful that they're out there. And I can think of, like you mentioned, many one-man operations that are out there versus companies like Ares and, you know, Vector and those who are producing excellent products too. But I think there's room for everybody given the number of kits out there and how they can be enhanced with this aftermarket stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very upbeat about the hobby these days.
Well, you know, you and I have probably done this, and I know there's probably thousands of other modelers out there, and we all talk about the price of a model. But I can remember buying models back in the 70s of things that we had to have a model of. And when you open the box after paying an exorbitant price, because it was the only one out there,
mm-hmm.
You opened it up and basically there was a bar of soap in the box.
Yeah, I remember those days.
And we were happy.
Yep, yep. I can remember paying $3.98 for a kit, and I thought, my God, am I going to be able to afford this? And yet I did, and I think that holds true today. Given the amount of money that people have at their disposal these days, they are buying these kits that cost over $100 or $200 or $300. But there again, a friend of mine told me a long time ago, you know, when something comes out, don't hesitate because it might be gone and you'll be kicking yourself later on. So I've kind of adopted that. I've kind of taken into account that, okay, I'm not going to be here forever, and am I apt to build this? If I am, I better buy it now, because if I don't, it may not be around. And you know how modelers' whims are. You know, a month from now, we want to build a very kit or use the aftermarket product that's no longer available. So you bite the bullet, but then you have to also look at that and the amount of time of enjoyment you have when you purchase that and what kind of enjoyment it's going to provide you for how many hours. So, you know, it's all related and relative, I think. But, you know, you show a little constraint. You don't have to buy everything that comes out. But if there's something there, for example, I mentioned the Fury kits. If one comes out, you better believe I'm going to snap up a couple of them because they're a couple I want to build. Something else, maybe not. I look at a lot of aftermarket stuff and I pass on it because I'm probably not going to use it and we'll probably won't get to that kit.
you know, modelers tend to be hoarders. I mean,
yeah,
they buy up supplies and,
sure,
oh, I'm going to use this soon. And then 20 years later, they go, oh, I'm going to build that kit. And here's all the stuff that I bought for it, including paints and all this. And then find out that the paints have dried up and the decals are all brittle, yep, and, you know, worthless. And
That's exactly what I did with that Hasegawa F-102 when I bought it. I thought someday, and it had a price tag of $350 on it. And it sat and it sat and it sat, and then I picked up the Airwaves etched detail set for it, and that went in the box. And then Draw Decals came out with the new decals, and I thought, well, now's the time. And then I had, you know, had it happen where Meng released theirs. So, yeah, you know, we do hoard those things, and it was a someday project, but it just kind of struck my fancy one day, and I thought, I'm going to finally do this thing. So, and I think that's another thing. As we age, you finally start looking at the shelf with a little bit more critical eye. Which one do I really want to build here, knowing that our time is not ad infinitum? And so you really go after the ones. And I was thinking about this before we'd start talking, too, and that is, there are some kits on my shelf that I really, really want to build. So that's kind of where I'm going these days. Current project on my bench is the Special Hobby Buccaneer in 72nd scale. That thing sat there for a while, and I thought, you know, there's no time like the present, and I ordered a beginner book for it so that I can have a good reference book. But it's one of those kits that I really wanted to build, and that's kind of where my emphasis is. I can look at 15 kits on my shelf and say, you know, I'm probably never going to build those. But on the other side of the coin, you don't get rid of them just yet, because maybe there's going to come a day when you're going to want to build that, and you'll be kicking yourself because you got rid of it.
Well, yeah, and I did that in the late 90s. Life interrupted us, and I had this massive collection of kits, and I decided to pack them in great big boxes and sell them online in lots. You know, you had to buy the whole box. If you wanted one kit out of the box, mm-hmm, too bad. You bid for the whole box. Mm-hmm. And I kick myself now, because some of those kits I wish I still had.
Yep.
But as you said, I look at my stash, and I know that my stash, as it sits today, will probably last me the rest of my life.
Sure.
And I'll probably even never finish them, mm-hmm, even if I was building, you know, one a day,
mm-hmm,
or one a week.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I've got all these spares that I can build more stuff from.
Mm-hmm.
But with all this stuff that's coming out, as you say, I take a more critical eye,
mm-hmm,
what I have, what I want to build, and what I want to buy. Now, I know that I've got some kits that are set aside in the stash that I know that, yeah, someday I could possibly want to build them, but if the opportunity came to take those kits and use them as barter or as a source to sell,
mm-hmm,
to put money in my pocket so that I can go out and buy one of the new releases, you know,
mm-hmm,
that's what I'd do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more and more modelers are reaching that point, especially in this economy, you know, the money's getting tighter.
Sure, sure. Sure, I couldn't agree with you more. And another possibility, too, is when your modeling club has a kit auction, well, you donate a couple of the older ones that you're not going to build and let somebody else get enjoyment out of them. I know somebody told me that a while back. You know, why hang on to stuff that you're never going to build or never going to use, be it household items or kits or whatever? Let somebody else get enjoyment out of that. And I've kind of adopted that philosophy, too. Sometimes, you know, we'll trade kits, or sometime I'll sell a kit. Other times I'll just donate it to a club raffle or an auction or something and let somebody else enjoy it.
You know, and that brings up a point. We've talked about this on the show. What do you do with your stash after you're gone? Now, I had a email here the other day from somebody, and they didn't build models, but their dad collected die casts. And it's a collection,
mm-hmm,
and a lot of these things are, you know, have never been opened. He's got his display ones that he's always had on the shelf for his enjoyment,
mm-hmm,
cars that he's owned especially. And they said, well, what do you suggest that I do with them? And I said, well, you know, you have a couple choices. If you got the time, you know, get online and find out what they're worth and then try and sell them yourself, or just sell them as a lot to somebody's eager to buy them, another collector. or donate them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then say, well, this is what they're valued at. Donate them to a charity or
take the write-off.
Something, and take the write-offs. Sure. You know, it's whatever works best for your personal situation.
Well, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, a while back, I mentioned to my wife, I said, at my visitation or at my wake, I would suggest, if you want to do it, invite all the guys from the club down or other guys that know me, and adjacent to where I'm laid out, have a vendor room. And lay it all out and put prices on it and let it go. I have this vision of my kids after my demise coming in and looking at my showcases and saying, well, you know, boy, Dad built all these. I'm going to keep this one. Let's pitch the rest.
You know, and that's not too far from the truth, because I know somebody who that's exactly what they did. They sold everything off, and then anything that was built, the ones that they didn't personally want, it got put in the trash can.
Yeah. I mean,
and we're not talking, you know, models that are just slapped together, look okay. We're talking really good models.
Yep. Yep. My son asked me a while back, he said, Dad, he said, are you disappointed that I didn't build models or didn't get into building models? I said, not at all. I said, I'm very selfish when it comes to my hobby. This was for me, and this got me through life, and this is something that I still enjoy doing on a part-time basis and just having fun and enjoying the time I spend modeling. I said, I don't expect anybody else to get into it, especially my son. You've got your interest. Go do your thing. This was for me. But I think, too, you know, we have a responsibility to look at the shelf of doom, as they call it, and go through that once in a while. I know this past couple of years I've gotten rid of probably 20, 30 kits in one way or another, either trading or selling or donating, just to cull the herd a little bit. And, you know, unfortunately I bought three or four too, but getting rid of 20 and 30 and buying three or four, you still got a good ratio going there. So, again, you know, what I'm going to buy, if I buy a kit, I'm going to build now, because I don't want to just, you know, stash. It's just going to be a bigger problem later on for those that come after me, you know. So maybe that vendor room isn't such a bad idea. I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, and there's always something there that somebody's going to want. Be it old decals or be it the kit that they've been looking for, and here Cooten's got it on a shelf, you know. So have at it, you know. That's the way I see it.
Working on anything for publication these days?
Yes, I've got a, well, I'm currently working, I just started that Buccaneer, and I've got the Italieri B25H that I just put a base coat of old silver on yesterday afternoon. That's going to be for Random Thoughts, the IPMS Canadian publication. And before that, I finished up the Minicraft Ventura, PV1 Ventura, with a ton of aftermarket that I squirreled together over the years and turned it into a Night Fighter. And that's also up at Random Thoughts. And got several that I've sent over to Fine Scale that are up for publication. So currently, right now, it's just the Buccaneer and the B25, and another one that I'm working on for Fine Scale is the little 72nd Pioneer kit of the AT-11. That's the Bombardier Trainer version of the Twin Beach, and mm-hmm. I modified that. I had a couple pictures, and a friend of a friend is a volunteer at the National Air and Space Museum and was kind enough to take pictures underneath the fuselage for me, because from pictures I saw on the net, I could see there was something under there, but I didn't know what it was. It turns out it was a belly gun position that the museum has fared over, and it's no longer has a gun sticking out of it. But so what I did is I duped what the museum did, and I have a photograph of one taxiing at Oshkosh. Maybe you saw it when you were there. I don't know. But it's a beautiful restoration with the red, white, and blue rudders and all natural metal finish. So I added the turret on top, and it was interesting because they had a Norden bomb sight up front, and I cobbed together some plastic, and then I covered it with a tarp that I made out of tissue paper and painted it up because I saw a picture on the net of one of those that way in there, covered up that way, and it's one of those I could show you, but I'd have to kill you things. So it will be a little conversation piece than the finished product. So those three are on the bench right now, and I enjoy working on multiples depending on the move. If you want to sand and fill today, you can do it on this one. If you want to paint, you can do it on this one. If you want to push it along and, you know, maybe decal it or do some more construction, you can do work on this one. So multiples is my game, and it's just fun bouncing from one to the other.
You know, talking about some of the kits that we've talked about and even talking about this bomber trainer based on the AT-11, on the show's Facebook page, we posted up, you know, somebody had shared a picture of the F-14 shooting down a Zero from that.
Yeah, Final Countdown.
Yeah, from the movie Final Countdown, and I put up a picture of Dale Brown Mega Fortress that I did and was using the old Revell kit and 1/144 scale. Okay. I built 20 plus years ago. Got thinking, you know, if there was to be another F-101 coming out anytime soon in any scale, especially the B, it made a cameo appearance in a movie that was a funny movie, a very popular movie at that time. Do you remember what that movie was?
No, I don't.
The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming.
Oh, sure. Okay. Okay.
Right at the end, they did a flyover of that little island community,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, all the townspeople on there stood to protect the submarine,
yep,
you know.
Yep, yep,
and
yep.
Basically, mm-hmm, everything's okay here.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm. Well, you may be rewarded with that Revell reissue of that 101B coming out.
And that just gets you thinking, you know, if you're looking for some kind of inspiration, a kit comes out, it's time to go dig out the old videotapes if you got the movie on video, or go looking for it online in a DVD or something in a re-release and, you know, and use that.
Exactly, exactly. Somebody just posted something on the net the other day about the movie Dive Bomber and all the great planes that are visible in that. And that's a fun thing to do, you know, drag out some of those you have on VHS or DVD and have a go at them. And it's just fun to watch and very nostalgic for me anyway.
Yeah, and in talking about this bomber trainer that you're working on, there that too was the centerpiece of a movie, you know.
Hmm.
I can't remember the name of the movie, but I want to say Errol Flynn might have been one of the characters in the movie. I'll have to go looking now to see what movie that was, but basically they were flying and teaching bombardiers.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was bomb movie. Maybe the movie was called Bombardiers.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Sounds like a Fred McMurray kind of thing.
He might have been in it as well. That was from that era, and I think a lot of those movies were produced by the same studio.
Well, it's one of those kits that's languished on my shelves. I bought it many years ago when they're a now-closed hobby shop, and the price tag was $6.50. And it's not a bad little kit, but, you know, you have to do a little work to it. And adding the turret was fairly easy. It's just a matter of doing some construction for fairings that are around the turret and then building up the turret insides and drilling a hole in the fuselage and going from there. So hopefully it's going to turn out okay. And invariably I'll get a picture in my mind's eye of the finished product, and that's kind of where I'm aiming. And it'll be a little different with an end number vertically on the fin. It's going to be an interesting little kit. And again, it's something that you don't see every day. And that's kind of something I enjoy doing is not doing the run-of-the-mill kits, but, you know, putting a little different twist on them. For example, the B-25 is going to be all natural metal, but it's got a little piece of tubing sticking out of the nose above the four guns on the nose. And I found out that they had I think it's a K-12 camera that they mounted in that thing to record what was going on. So I've added that little detail, and I've cobbed together a boarding ladder up underneath the fuselage, forward fuselage, so that's going to be hanging down. So just those little things you put on there, it's kind of fun to do, and of course, you know, putting a natural metal finish that looks decent on there, so it's a challenge and fun to do. So just where I'm at today, so with three like that, I mean, here you go, you know. Figures, I got a TCH meeting on Saturday, and I'm vice president this year. And, of course, if it's going to be crappy, I'm not driving I-35 for 90 miles. Uh-uh. No, I'm too old for that stuff.
Yeah. I'm seeing that from a lot of the guys in our club that commute up from Milwaukee and stuff. They just, you know, if it's any chance of foul weather, they just stay home.
That's what I'm doing. You know, I explained that to the president when we ran, and I said, man, I said, yeah, I'd love to, and I'll be happy to, but I said, you got to understand. I said, I'm not the guy that's 35 years old anymore that takes on the roads and says, screw it, I'll be fine. You know, too many crazies out there, and I enjoy living too much. So,
well, you know, that presents a good point that a lot of the clubs that are out there, like yours and ours here in Oshkosh and Milwaukee, people commute from a great distance to get to the club meeting every month.
Yeah, most of it is out of Minneapolis, but there's a couple guys. One guy comes in all of St. Peter, Minnesota, which is, you know, southwest, probably about 60 miles. You got another guy in South Dakota that makes it occasionally. And, you know, it's I've been doing it for, 35 years, and we're 90 miles south. So, it's a drive. There's no question about it. But, you know, if the roads are fine, there's no problem whatsoever. I still enjoy doing it. But, you know, when you get the threat of bad weather, and I know what I-35 can get like. I mean, south of Faribault or Owatonna, it's just a plain. And if there's any wind with it, good Lord, it's a mess. And I've seen that several times, and I just said, that's enough of that. So we shall see. But
yeah, I mean, for me, it's about a 20-mile drive. But it can be, depending on the weather.
Oh, yeah.
In the wintertime, it can be probably the most treacherous 20 miles anywhere.
Yeah, are you two-lane or four-lane?
Well, they're upgrading to six-lane here now.
Oh.
So we're getting big city.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we have bodies of water, and there's a bridge.
Yeah.
And that bridge can, you know, it can be pretty treacherous.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the other alternate route is to go a little further east and go through the country, kind of, and then, you know, the county roads.
Right.
But those, too, can be, you know, pretty nasty.
Oh, yeah. Yep, I've seen that here, too. You just don't do it, that's all. So, yeah, they can get glazed up real easy, and I no thank you. You know, I've had to turn around a couple of times due to ice and snow, and I said it's not even worth it anymore. So, you know, the way the forecast is, though, the day they preach gloom and dooms, and then by the time you get there, this too shall pass, and usually shows up later or doesn't show up at all. So they tend to err on the side of, you know, extreme, it seems like.
Let's do that. Well, thank you, Frank.
You're very welcome, Jerry. Thank you.
Thanks once again to everyone who has been a guest on the show. I look forward to having you back, as I did Zach and Frank on this 50th episode. Given the size of this community, I know we'll find more who are willing to share this great hobby with all of us here on the show. You'll want to stay abreast of the happenings on the show's Facebook page. We've got a hefty batch of kits from our friends and show supporters at Revell, which we'll be giving away. So watch and listen to learn how you can win. If you want to share a comment with us, you can do so by leaving a voicemail via Skype. Our Skype address is the Plastic Scale Modeling Hour. Or you can use either your computer or your smartphone to record a message and email it to us. Who knows, maybe we'll include it in on a future show. If you want to be a guest or suggest a guest, if you want to promote your scale modeling event, organization, or learn how you can support or sponsor the program, contact us by email. Our address is mailbag@theplasticscalemodelinghour.com. Fellow scale model enthusiasts, remember, it is not the workbench that makes the model. It is the modeler at the workbench. This is Hawkeye. I hope you can tune in next week. Happy modeling! The Plastic Scale Modeling Hour, talk radio for scale modelers, is produced, copyrighted, and syndicated by 0-60 Marketing, LLC, Neenah, Wisconsin. Accelerate your business with 0-60 Marketing. The reproduction or rebroadcasting of this program is prohibited without the written consent of 0-60 Marketing. Until next time, see ya!
That's a wrap.